All right, what's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We got Sarah Gill here. Just finished up her talk about Return to Learn, and she's working for formerly Ben Hogan.
Sure. If so, Texas Health Sports Medicine is where we landed.
Yep. Right, and Mike Hopper, I posted a picture of you talking to Mike Hopper over at Bishop Lynch. He said he's talked to you several times and never actually met you, so maybe he's a little bit closer, bridging the gap.
Absolutely. Right, so yeah, Mike's been very helpful, actually. Shouts to Mike, for sure.
So real quick, I didn't have any of your like contact information or social media, mm-hmm. so I'm asking you for that there at the end. But there was a couple questions I wanted to ask. One, in your talk you mentioned that you guys have the, as you're kind of the concussion go-between in your office, between you and the physicians and the athletes, as the modifications for the athletes' recommendations. What does that look like in your office?
Sure. Yeah, I kind of skipped over sort of explaining what we do in the office a little bit. But, okay, so a concussion management office predominantly is run by either a physician, or in our case, it's actually PA run with a medical director kind of overseeing. So my role in the clinic is on the day-to-day is just, you know, kind of going in with that provider and, you know, helping with the actual patient stuff. You know, I put them on their impact. I kind of get that initial intake, information history, all that good stuff. Then the provider goes in, does her thing, and then I'm responsible for basically everything that comes after that in terms of, you know, writing out the accommodations that we've decided upon based on how the kid looks that day, explaining all that to them, how that's going to work, who they should give it to, if there's any sort of exercises that we think the kid would benefit from. I go ahead and explain those to them, whether it be, you know, visual or balance, that kind of thing. We'll go ahead and give out some of that stuff, and then sort of just give them their follow-up instructions. From there, I do take those notes, and I will email them to the high school athletic trainer, or if it's a middle school kid, maybe their school nurse is usually my contact in that setting, and then basically letting them know this kid has a concussion, they're under our care, so any questions that they have can be directed to us. More often than not, they don't have any. It's pretty straightforward, but we obviously run into a lot of situations where some of our longer-term kids, there is a little bit more of a back and forth. That communication does usually go through me. I don't usually involve our providers that much, honestly, until it's if it's something like a super, you know, like a physical issue where they're, you know, physically having a hard time tolerating school, and they want to talk to the doctor specifically about why that is or what's going on. That doesn't happen too often. If a kid needs homebound paperwork because they're that bad, the physician gets involved at that point. But for the most part, it's just me sort of spitballing with the school, making sure that they understand everything that we're trying to do. We've developed some really nice relationships with the schools in our area. It's become relatively seamless, but yeah, we obviously have some times where it gets a little tricky. But that communication seems up a lot, and yeah, that's usually me.
All right, so how often is it that you're having to communicate with the athletic trainer versus communicate with the parent? Like, mm-hmm. which is where do you spend most of your time?
Sure. So the parent is obviously with the kid at their appointment, but then yes, they will oftentimes call back with either questions they forgot to ask, or if they are having a problem with the school, 9 out of 10 times the parent is going to be the one I hear from first. Every now and then I'll hear from the athletic trainer or a counselor or somebody like that first, but more often than not, it's going to be the parent calling, being concerned. Hey, the school's telling me they need this. The school's not doing this. That kind of thing. You know, can we follow up with them? In which case I'll contact that, you know, the school directly, whoever's most appropriate, which again, our athletic trainers do such a good job of handling their business. It's almost never an athletics issue. It's almost never a play issue. It comes up, but it's very rare. Way more often it's an attendance issue or a grades issue. So I'm dealing with that side of things. Now where I do talk to the athletic trainers most often, I think, is in basically what I was doing today, which is a advocation role. Like, I need y'all's help. You know, the teachers are giving this kid a hard time. I need somebody on campus who can kind of explain to them what's going on. You know, can you guys help me with that? You're the one that's seeing them every, or sometimes I'll even say, hey, you're the ones that are seeing these guys every day. Should I be concerned? Is this kid, you know, milking it? What are you seeing on a day-to-day? And I'll sometimes get some pretty good insight, you know, from those guys. And I'll have this conversation with the parents. I'll be able to tell them, hey, I understand that the kid's having an issue, but he's in the training room acting a fool. It's making it hard for the teachers to help him. So can we, you know, work on that a little bit? So my athletic trainers are really my eyes and ears in the at the school. But oftentimes that communication starts first with the parent. It is the most fun part of my job, is getting back with my athletic training buddies. I love any time I can get them on the phone. I always feel bad bothering them because they always sound very busy and very tired, but they're never as happy to hear from me as I am to talk to them, but I enjoy it a lot, that collaboration.
All right. So what if you are having that counselor that is having trouble agreeing to approve those accommodations or recommendations? At our school, it seems to go pretty easy. We just give them the paperwork. They make the accommodations. The nurse sends it out to all the teachers, and it goes from there. I've had some students say, hey, they're still doing this. And so then we just contact the nurse, and the nurse sends it, hey, you have to follow these kind of thing. So what do you do in that conversation to say you really need to...
Yeah, it usually is just a follow-up. It usually is just, hey, this is something I'm hearing back from the parent. Can you just follow up on this for me? And it's going to be one or the other. Either I've got a lot of bulldog school nurses out there that handle business, and they don't take no mess, and that really helps. But those same school nurses are oftentimes the one that will kind of, again, give me that feedback and say, like, hey, like, we understand you guys are trying to help the kid, but here's what we're seeing. How can we reconcile this? And it just opens up that conversation. More often than not, it's just a communication breakdown. More often than not, our schools, especially our counselors in our 504, will have an alternative request / suggestion. They might say, okay, look, we've got finals coming up. I understand they're not cognitively ready to take a test, but what if I give them a take home? Or what if we give them an alternative? Would that be okay? We want to be compliant, but we don't want the kid to get behind if it's not necessary. And sometimes the answer is, yep, that's a great idea. And sometimes the answer is, nope, that's not appropriate either. We just got to hang in there. We just got to figure it out. And more often than not, they'll do it. But it's sometimes that extra conversation. There's not a whole lot of fighting. It's not very often we have to kind of go to war with anybody. It's happened a couple of times, but it's pretty rare. Usually it's just some clarification and some good communication, and it helps. But it's just stress on the kid that we try to avoid if all possible. And so we try to avoid it if we can, but when it does happen, it's usually pretty easy to knock down. We've had a couple schools that we've developed such good relationships with that we really trust them. One in particular was like, look, our biggest thing is tests. They get so behind. Once they're physically able, because we have a pretty good cognitive therapy and evaluation program. So we'll have a lot of kids that aren't having physical symptoms, but they very obviously are cognitively deficient because of their injury. And those are kids, and for the longest time, we would just say no test, no test, no test. And that could go on for months. And so understandably, the school would get frustrated. And one of the compromises they asked for was, look, can you please just trust us to accommodate this kid properly? Once they're physically able to tolerate a test, can we give them the test? And if they bomb it, we're not going to fail them. We'll help them. But can we just get it out of the way? At least let them try it. And we basically were like, for you, yes. We're not going to do that for everybody. But because we have a nice relationship with that school, yes. And that's been fine. They were getting a little bit annoyed with us. And that kind of helped. I think it helped save us some referrals. I think they're about to start looking somewhere else if we didn't loosen up a little bit. But that was a good compromise there.
I think what you said, one of the things as athletic trainers, we don't need to be in the middle of that accommodation fight. My personal opinion, and I've told people this, is we don't want the teacher or the coach in our athletic training room. Why are we stepping into their classroom? And so if they're not doing the accommodations properly, then maybe my job would be go to the principal and say, we're having some issues, but I'm out of it. You've got to handle it. You're the head person of this campus. And let it go from there, but just step away and let them fight it out all day long. Because, again, and also, once you get in the middle of that, you may be in every 504 meeting there is and not be in your athletic period taking care of your athletes. And so it's a double-edged sword. You want the kid to get help, but you step in there, careful what you wish for.
I think that's right. I think the athletic trainer's time is so limited on that campus. And again, that's why I say I sometimes hate making those phone calls because I know how busy those guys are. And so that's why, I hope that the take-home point today was more about a little bit of advocacy for your kid and just general guidelines. Like if a teacher doesn't understand how to accommodate, maybe you can be a resource for them.
Right.
But that's it. But I agree. I think stepping in there too hard is not anything that you want to do. You just might be one of the first people to identify that a kid is coming in stressed and symptomatic and hitting a wall. And you might be one of the first people that identifies, man, it's just my chemistry teacher, they are killing me, and being somebody who could maybe get that ball rolling.
Right, and I don't disagree with a 30-minute, return to learn educational program. Again, if they're not, well, you got to do this, and you got to do this, because you've lost them, and that whole 30 minutes was pointless. And no matter what you say from then on, you have no credibility, And so, again, you just got to be careful. I get it. I don't want you as a teacher, well, you need to, blah, blah, blah. no, go away. This is my domain. Yeah. That's their domain. Let them have it.
You got to frame it as making their lives easier. I mean, that's how I kind of try to frame everything when it comes to whether it be, you know, excessively detailed notes or, you know, sending all those emails to my athletic trainers. I really am trying to take something that can be a hassle and make it as simple as possible. That's what I'm trying to do. And I think in equipping those teachers with those accommodations, getting them kind of ready for it before it comes in, if you frame it that way, hopefully it's a little bit more palatable than being like, right, let me teach you how to teach your class.
Right.
That's obviously not something that you want to do.
I know I'm going to ask this and I got to go check that. But the other thing you said that was one of those aha moments that you don't think about. You understand, we know, and you don't, just over your head. You have visual problems, get them a elevator pass. And you're like, crap, you know? I mean, it's, and we had them all the time. Then, hold on to the wall or get the rail, but you know, you're setting them back, you know, and it's like somebody that gets new glasses for the first time, and everybody, you know, it's like we got to work with that. And so I was like,
And elevator, I mean, that's not something that was on our accommodations, I'd say, for the first year that I was in the clinic, but we kept having kids ask for it, and after a while you just slap your head, you're like, let's just include that. If they need to be dismissed from class early, they probably also need a pass, elevator pass. And hopefully that'll only be for a week or two, and well, good. I'm glad if I had at least one aha moment, then I'm good. I'm good for today.
All right. I got some other stuff that we can talk about.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
All right. So continuing on the aha moment, one of the things that you said at the very beginning was if you've seen one concussion, then you've seen one concussion. Like it really is, you know, we go to these workshops and we say no two concussions are alike. But then just the way you said it, you know, if you've seen one concussion, then you're expecting then you've seen them all. You're expecting that. And then you said you've seen one concussion. So that's another thing, like, oh, yeah, that's a great.
Because how many times have you heard, we hear it all the time in the athletic side of things, right? A coach, I mean, how many coaches have we heard, I had concussions when I was a kid, or, you know, or that teammate, well, my concussion got better in however many days. But we hear it in the classroom as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's a good reminder there. And then you recommended vestibular therapy within 7 to 10 days. I missed part of that there. So you said if this, then vestibular therapy within 7 to 10 days really speeds up the recovery.
It seems to. If we can jump on that early, the recovery in that specific area seems to come about faster. As in, they get back to a normal balance test. Their symptoms with their VOMS decreases with that therapy, as opposed to if we just wait it out and let them heal, kind of like we used to. Honestly, I think like we used to. The vestibular therapy piece is still relatively new, but the early research does show that implementing that early at least resolves those symptoms early. Is that the same as a concussion being healed? Hard to say for sure, but that kid is at least a lot more comfortable and a lot more capable of doing some of that normal school participation, home participation, because they're not having all those symptoms. And there does seem to be a good correlation between getting that in early as opposed to waiting. We used to not even consider therapy until they'd at least their second or third visit, not kind of after a couple of the conferences I've been to and heard that, I've started sort of pushing it a little bit, like day one. You know, if you had a grade 2 ankle sprain and you saw the ortho and you knew you're going to be out for 4 weeks, how long would you wait to start your physical therapy? You know, ideally you would start it right away,
right?
If you had access to it. And again, there's an accessibility issue here. Not everybody's going to have access to vestibular therapy, but there's some very simple things that you can do in the training room as well. But yeah, early therapy, better results. It's true with concussion, just like any other injury.
Yeah, I was just listening to a different workshop. Chris Shields was talking about how they start physical therapy for concussions a whole lot sooner now. You know, they do the Buffalo treadmill thing.
Absolutely.
And before it was like 1 to 2 weeks of rest or, you know, like you said, like a dark room until the symptoms are gone. But now it's like, well, let's get them moving. You know, as long as we're not making the symptoms worse, even if they're still having symptoms, you know, and again, this was a physical therapist in a controlled environment. So as long as we're not making the symptoms worse, then that's kind of along the same lines of what you're saying. Let's get them started earlier and help speed the recovery as long as we're not making things worse.
Yep. We need to obviously not put them at any risk of a new injury, and we need to not increase their symptoms. If we avoid those two things, physical activity, again, just like for any other injury, is a good thing. The Buffalo test that whole thing is so fascinating, just that addressing that cardiovascular aspect, the way the brain controls the heart and the lungs. I mean, just you almost have to retrain that sometimes. And you don't want to wait until they're 3 weeks in and asymptomatic, and you start return to play, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, every time this kid's heart rate gets up, he's symptomatic. Well, that's something you could have been addressing for weeks. So yeah, I think being proactive, I think the education that athletic trainers have received has been so good and so consistent that we're ready. We're ready to change. We're ready to progress and get a little bit more aggressive with these injuries. And so far, the everything seems to be pointing to it being a good thing. More work for you guys, but it's good. It's good for the
and
kids.
Then one of the last thing was you talked about lunchtime being a trigger, and I hadn't really considered that before. You know, they'll okay, we'll keep them in the athletic training room or during athletics, we send them to the nurses because it's calmer and quieter. But then right after that, we send them to lunch. So if we're not saying, hey, don't go to a huge crowded room with people maybe fighting or throwing food or whatever, that's definitely one of the things that you also don't want to do the social aspect and say you have to go sit by yourself in the principal's office. No, look, just you and a couple of your friends just go sit out on the patio or just go allow them to sit on those benches that are away from loud noise.
Somewhere that might typically be off limits to kids, can we allow them to have that space as a quiet space? That's usually where it comes from. More often than not, the kids see it as a restriction. I try to paint it as an accommodation. Like, no, we just want you to be given a space that you're comfortable in, have a couple of friends there, so that lunch can be a restful time and not a triggering time. Lunch is, that's one of the biggest fights though with kids is they don't, that's an accommodation they don't want. But you have to convince them why it's important and also, again, try to paint it in a positive light. I get a lot of phone calls which are, he's feeling better. I hate to bother you, but all I need is a note that just says, can you please go to lunch? Like he hasn't had a headache in 2 days. He's not worried about sports. He's not worried about school, but he'd like to go to lunch.
Yeah.
Yes, he can go to lunch, and we'll send a note basically clearing them to go back to lunch. So it is an issue. It's something that's tough for the kids, but if we can make it as not lame for them as possible, that's what we try to do. But it's a biggie. We have can't tell you how many kids would say, you know, I just seem to get a headache every day in my math class. Okay, what do you have before math? Lunch. Okay, maybe it's not math. maybe it's lunch, and so we have to kind of address it that way. So.
Yeah.
Troubleshooting is a big one, so yeah.
Very cool. And then I always ask questions, you know, be willing to ask questions or to dig deeper or to see if it's something else going on or to say, well, let's just ask and see.
Yep.
I had a situation where a kid was, I got cleared from this concussion, and my coworker was like, no, you didn't. And I was like, well, let's just look at the paperwork and see. Because instead of just fighting with a kid, I'd say, well, let's just look. You know, in that situation, it's just, let's just look, or let's just call and ask. And then you're kind of on the same team. So, Sarah, if somebody wants to get a hold of you to find out more, or like you said in your presentation, if they want to get some of your files, how are they going to do that?
Okay. So the easiest way, the oldest of social media is my email. So my full name is Sarah Gill, SarahGill. At texashealth.org, and that's all spelled out. I am trying to become a Twitter person. I know I'm missing out on a lot of good and bad in life by not being a more consistent Twitterer. So when I get that going, it is at Sarah Gill ATC.
All right. So Sarah Gill ATC on Twitter or Sarah Gill at texashealth.org.
That's correct.
All right. So again, Sarah Gill at the West Texas or the Davis Mountains 32nd Sports Medicine Clinic. With the follow-up interview. And again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Jeremy, thank you.